Genesis chapter 32, reading from verse 3. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau. Thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban, and stayed there until now. And I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants. And I have sent to tell my lord that I may find grace in his sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, We came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks and the herds and the camels, into two bands, and said, If Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord which saidst unto me, Return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies, and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me, and the mother with the children. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. And he lodged there that same night, and took of that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother, 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milch camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she asses and 10 foals. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants. Every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, Pass over before me, and put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, saying, When Esau my brother meeteth thee, and asketh thee, saying, Whose art thou, and whither goest thou, and whose are these before thee? Then thou shalt say, They be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau. And behold also, he is behind us. And so commanded he the second and the third, and all that followed the droves, saying, On this manner shall ye speak unto Esau when ye find him. And say ye moreover, Behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face. Peradventure, he will accept of me. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. May God bless to us that portion of Holy Writ. Last time we read one verse only from our chapter, Verse 3, Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And we centered our thoughts upon the sovereignty and providence of God. Whilst God had been working mightily for Jacob in his latter years away in Padan Aram, so too had he been working in the life of Esau back in Beersheba. Not for Esau's blessing, for he was a reprobate, but working in the heart of Esau for the blessing of his brother Jacob. And so we saw by the voluntary action, you will remember, we saw by the voluntary action of Esau to go and dwell away in Seir, the secret counsel of Jehovah was brought to pass as the land of promise was vacated for the covenant heir upon his return. And with this wonderful example before us, we went into more of the detail of this glorious subject of providence. But I will recap no further, or we shall again get drawn into a theme which is so dear to our hearts. We'll continue now with the narrative, Genesis 32, verse 3, and Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, Thus shall ye speak unto my lord Esau, Thy servant Jacob saith thus, I have sojourned with Laban, and stayed there until now. And I have oxen and asses, flocks and men servants and women servants, and I have sent to tell my Lord that I may find grace in thy sight. And from these verses it is obvious that Jacob had been informed that his brother was dwelling in Seir, an area which they will come into close proximity with as they journey on their way back to Beersheba. And it is also clear that Jacob is apprehensive. Because of his apprehension, he sends out messengers to contact Esau. And Jacob instructs these men as to their approach and what they are to say. With great diplomacy, Esau is to be addressed as my lord, and Jacob describes himself as the servant of his brother. He then makes no secret as to where he has been for the past 20 years. It's a long time for two brothers to be estranged. He makes no secret as to where he has been. It's to be disclosed to them immediately they meet. And then in verse 5, he goes further and discloses to some degree his possessions. This was not out of any sense of boasting. The reason for this, I believe, to be that when he left home 20 years before, he was penniless. And Esau would have known this. He left home, Beersheba, and took his journey away absolutely penniless. And he did not want Esau, his brother, upon hearing of his return, to suddenly jump to the conclusion that he was a returning prodigal who would have to be kept by his elder brother. You see, Esau could well have pictured a poor beggarly creature in great poverty and need, one who would have disgraced his family. No, it's not like that. This is the message Jacob is trying to get over, I believe. And so he says, upon meeting my brother, you tell them You tell Esau, your younger brother is now a man of substance. He's not coming back. He's a returning fit for nothing. You let him know that I've made good. Being thus briefed, the servants set off on their mission. Verse 6. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to thy brother Esau, and also he cometh to meet thee, and 400 men with him. And what took place by way of conversation when the messengers contacted Esau, we are not told. But it is clear that it drew forth immediate action from Esau. For he quickly summons his 400 men to accompany him and to set out to meet his younger brother. Some commentators say this was out of goodwill to welcome and do honor to Jacob's return. Others take a contrary line and suggest that Esau had an ill design. Well, both is conjecture. We do not know. But the very uncertainty of Esau's motive causes great alarm with Jacob. And in this, I see the providence of God yet again. Oh, beloved, his ways are unsearchable. On times, the Lord does cause the minds of his children to be oppressed with anxiety, to be placed in a dilemma. They wonder what the future will hold. I say, yes, oft times the Lord does cause this to happen in order that they may be the more cast upon him. It's one of the actions of divine providence. You see, for it incites trust. It also draws out the soul in more fervent prayer. That is, of course, if the person is in a healthy state of soul. If not, then he or she will begin to question and say, well, why did God allow this to happen to me? Why must this be brought into my life? Then, of course, fear escalates. Such a reaction as this is always indicative of a weak faith. How did Jacob react? Verse 7. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. At first, he was just like those panic-stricken disciples in the boat when the storm arose. Lord, save us, we perish. He said unto them, why are ye so fearful, O ye of little faith? I say such an attitude and such a reaction to the dealings of God is always indicative of a weak faith. Do you know, it was only days before, it may be some little time has elapsed since we did that particular study, but in the history of Jacob, it was only days before that Jacob had a vision of those mighty heavenly ministers. And he named the spot Mahanaim. Why, he exclaimed, we're a double camp. Two companies. The angels of the Lord round about us. It's only a day or two previously. But that vision had dissipated. Jacob could only see his little division now. His faith gives way well nigh to despair. Of course, we must never lose sight of the fact that no one knew better than Jacob how deeply embedded was Esau's grudge. Jacob knew full well. It was no idle threat made some 20 years ago upon his life. That intention is still burning in his heart, thinks Jacob. He was greatly afraid. 400 men approaching. My, what chance had he got? 12 young children too. 11 of them born to be the tribal heads of the earthly covenant people. What shall I do? Is his reaction. Yes, the Bible states he was distressed. And the word really means, in the underlying Hebrew, extreme anguish of mind. Verse 7 and 8. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people that was with him, and the flocks and herds and the camels into two bands. And said, if Esau come to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape. Yes, Jacob is obviously in a panic. Now, at a human level, one can understand it. But at a spiritual level, his faith was low. He lost sight of the double camp. And so, being in a panic, he takes quick precautionary measures. He divides his cavalcade into two sections. He halves his family, his servants, and all his livestock. His reasoning being that if the one band is attacked, then the others perhaps may be able to escape. Now this again, some say, savors of Jacob's scheming mind. But then it is at that point that his faith seems to surface again. He comes back to a position of greater balance. There is a measure of poise seen again. And he betakes himself to God in prayer. Verse 9. Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, the Lord, which saidst unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. Oh, perhaps Jacob should not be too severely criticized for the precautions he had taken. For when we come to this verse, it has all the marks of true prayer and genuine faith. But quite frankly, I do not agree with commentators who lay too much stress upon the scheming mind of Jacob at this point. Oh, at a human level, yes, he was in a panic. His faith may have temporarily weakened, but it didn't last for long. Here we see him going into the presence of God, and I say this has the marks of true prayer and of genuine faith. Look at that verse. In the first place, he lays hold of the covenant. O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac. Now this does not imply that he was not Jacob's God, for he was. But what is implied is, as thou wert faithful to them, as thou didst prove thyself in such abundant measure to my grandfather Abraham, and likewise to my father Isaac, O Lord, as thou wert faithful to them, so be faithful to me. For it was thou, O Lord, that didst say unto me, Return unto thy land and thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am acting in absolute obedience to thy revealed will. Thou saidst it, O Lord. Lord, I'm only being obedient to thy mandate. Beloved, when a man or a woman can come into the presence of God and in all honesty speak like this, they have nothing to fear. Nothing to fear. However dark things may appear at the moment, if we are walking in the will of God, He will deal well with us. He has promised. And our God is a faithful, covenant-keeping God. Our God is the same. He's the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. The God of our fathers. And this God is our God. Forever and ever. And so we see Jacob here reminding the Almighty of his promise and laying hold of the covenant. And he continues in verse 10, I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant, for with my staff I passed over this Jordan. Now I am become two bands. He now confesses in this prayer his unworthiness. He acknowledges the mercy and the grace of God in revealing to him all the truth, which is the very basis of his faith and trust. See, Lord, it's all these things which thou hast promised. I'm staking everything to it. Then he reminisces before his God as his mind goes back over 20 years. I say he reminisces in the presence of God. When he left Beersheba for that unknown and lonely journey into Padan Aram. And he says in the presence of God, and he's addressing the Almighty, and he says, when I passed over Jordan on my way to Padan Aram, I had nothing other than my shepherd's staff. I was alone. I had no friends to accompany me. I had no servants to attend me. I had no silver, no gold, no flocks, no herds when I crossed over. I'm soon to cross back over Jordan again. Now look. I am two bands. How different to my circumstances now to 20 years ago. And Lord, it's all of your doings. It's all of your doings. I am not worthy of all this. It is you that has given me the increase Surely, O God, thy covenant children and all the bounty which thou hast bestowed upon them, surely it's not to be wasted. It's not to be spoiled at the hand of the reprobate. Surely it's not to be carried off. These covenant gifts, thy bounty, they're not to go off into the land of Seir to become the possession of the Edomites. He then goes on to put in a strong plea for God to act on his behalf. Verse 11. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. It is surely clear to us that as he continues in prayer, so his faith is strengthening. He unhesitatingly asks his God for deliverance at this point. For I fear, he says, that these children and their mothers could be smitten. Oh, it is those tribal heads, those heads of the covenant people, which is his chief burden. They must be spared, he is reasoning in the presence of God. They must be spared, and their mothers. For these children aren't reared yet. Oh, I love this prayer. Here is fatherly concern at its highest. Not only fatherly concern, but godly concern. I personally feel that in all that we have seen in the life of Jacob so far, he's never shone as brightly as this before. Verse 12. And thou saidst, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. Now, as he concludes his prayer, as he finalizes this season of intercession, he again reminds the Almighty of that covenant made with Abraham and with Isaac, and later confirmed to him, poor failing Jacob. Lord, thou saidst it, is his plea. And his faith was clinging to that covenant promise. I said earlier that here is an example of true prayer. And we must learn the lesson, beloved. I pause to make application here. We must learn this lesson. In our praying, we should give thanks to God for his mercy and grace in revealing to us his truth. Poor failing creatures, such as you and me. We should thank God for revealing to us his truth, which is the basis of our faith. It's that upon which we rest. We too should ever remember that all our material blessings, our family circle, is all of God's ordering and of his providence. Then there should be confession. Lord, I am not worthy. I am a sinner. Never should we fail, beloved, in confessing our shortcomings. Intercession too. Making request unto God. Deliver me from Esau, my brother. He came right to the point. Lord, this is the urgent thing. He didn't just ask for that. Esau's praying was not a shopping list. Thanksgiving to God. An acknowledgement that God's hand has been upon him in everything material and physical. Confession of shortcomings. Then intercession. Deliver me from my brother Esau. Save my children. Save my children. Brethren and sisters, how much we have to ask for. Yes, indeed. Petition for all men is biblical. Petition for all men. We don't concern ourselves as to whether or not they are the chosen, the elect of God. We pray for sinners and preach to sinners to earth's remotest bounds. Secret things belong unto Jehovah. Further to this, in our praying, we should ask in faith, believing, claiming the promises. But Lord, thou saidst it. Thou saidst it. Rehearsing the covenant, the everlasting covenant, the covenant of grace. Rehearsing it in the presence of God. Extolling the wonders of it and magnifying the author of it, the Almighty God of heaven, the God, I say again, of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, the God of our fathers, the God of our salvation. Oh, let this prayer of Jacob's both instruct and encourage us. What saith the New Testament in Philippians 4 and verse 6? Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. We come now to the latter section of our reading. Jacob prepares a gift for Esau. Verse 13, and he lodged there that same night and took for that which came to his hand a present for Esau his brother. 200 she-goats and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milch camels with their colts, 40 kine and 10 bulls, 20 she-asses and 10 foals. In no way, oh, I feel, having seen all that we have seen, in no way must this be construed as to make Jacob distrustful of his God immediately following his intercession. As Dr. John Gill so rightly states, I believe, although Jacob had committed himself and his family to God, yet he acted in a prudent way. John Calvin too says, for though we cast ourselves upon God in prayer, that we may have peaceful and tranquil minds, yet this security must never render the Christian indolent. Martin Luther too speaks in a more elaborate fashion but in similar vein. The word of God says in the book of Proverbs, chapter 18 and verse 16, a man's gift maketh room for him. And it was in this context, I believe, that Jacob acted. But his dependence was upon God. Now, doubtless you and I know believers who have been placed in a very awkward, serious, maybe desperate situation. Whenever you see them, they're always so quick to tell you, well, I'm praying about it, committed it all to the Lord. But they do nothing. They do nothing. Our dependence must be upon God. But there is that which we are called upon to do. And even in this connection, there can be an imbalance between divine sovereignty and human responsibility. And we have a responsibility. And we are to act accordingly, but always in dependence upon God. To quote Calvin again, he says, when we have discharged our duty, and that's vital, when we have discharged our duty, yet we still depend upon the mercy, the grace, and the goodness of God. And so Jacob, in all prudence and wisdom, he selects 580 head of stock. 580 head of stock as a present for his aggrieved brother. Now such a gift only goes to prove the enormity of Jacob's wealth, that he could afford such a present as this. Now we can appreciate more fully what was meant by that verse, away back in chapter 30, verse 43. And the man increased exceedingly, and had much cattle and maidservants and men servants and camels and asses. Why? Well, away back there in Padan Aram, his rings straight withies, you remember? He used business acumen. God blessed it. Now we can see the extent of this. He selects 580 head of livestock. Jacob then organized the delivery of this great present. He didn't send them off willy-nilly. His business mind worked to full capacity. He did it orderly. He did it prudently. Verse 16. And he delivered them into the hand of his servants. Every drove by themselves, and said unto his servants, pass over before me. Put a space betwixt drove and drove. And he commanded the foremost, saying, when he saw my brother meeteth thee, and asketh thee, saying, whose art thou, and whither goest thou? And whose are these before thee? Then thou shalt say, they be thy servant Jacob's. It is a present sent unto my lord Esau. And behold also, he is behind us. And so commanded he the second, and the third, and all that followed the drove, saying, on this manner shall ye speak unto Esau, when ye find him. Three droves are arranged, with a set space between each. A most impressive gift, surely, for any man to receive. Why, it's a fortune in itself. Verse 20. And say ye moreover, behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goeth before me, and afterward I will see his face. Peradventure, he will accept of me. Each drover was to conclude his message with the words, Behold, thy servant Jacob is behind us. It was to be made perfectly clear to Esau that whilst this massive gift was to be made to him, his brother was coming along behind and would shortly meet him. It was not a case of his making a present to absorb Esau's thought for a while, whilst Jacob slipped through a detour. Not at all. No, you're to make it perfectly clear to my elder brother that I am coming and I intend to meet him. Jacob will be here very soon, said each head drover, and you will see his face. Verse 21. So went the present over before him, and himself lodged that night in the company. Full instructions having been given, the gift was dispatched. Jacob stays behind in the encampment. And this verse would lead us to suppose that he was there for the night. But the next verse tells us that he modified his plan. But we shan't see that this evening. Esau on his way with 400 men. Three droves of livestock, total number 580. These drovers are to meet the agreed brother Esau. Jacob lodged that night in the company, and I believe the atmosphere was tense. As night fell, so the apprehension deepened with the darkness. What would happen when Esau met the first drover? Doubtless many hearts were beating fast that night. There was an air of excitement, coupled with grave uncertainty. But that was not all. That was not all. For one of the most wonderful things ever to happen to the patriarch Jacob was to take place that very night, although he did not know it. This will be the content of next week's sermon, God willing. We are seeing now Jacob throwing up in a rather more spiritual light the grace of God in this supplanter is to be made more manifest still as we continue his life. May our consideration of it be a blessing to us all, for God's glory. Amen. Hymn number 93. Through all the changing scenes of life, in trouble and in joy, the praises of my God shall still my heart and tongue employ. 93.